The next stage in the 2012 race for the White House started this past Wednesday evening with the first presidential debate of the season. Both campaigns have been affected by political rhetoric, as often through having to react to issues raised by supporters and opponents alike as through anything else. And there was a lot of speculation ahead of the debate about if and how the subject would come up. Well, one of the most cogent analyses appeared in the Washington Post on religion section earlier this week, written by Georgetown University Assistant Professor Jacques Berlinerblau. He's also the author of the new book, How to Be Secular, A Call to Arms for Religious Freedom. And I am very happy to have Dr. Berlinerblau joining us now on State of Belief Radio. He's been on this show before. Today, he's here to review what we heard this past Wednesday evening. Dr. Berlinerblau, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Take just a minute, if you will, to summarize your article in the Washington Post.
Sure. I mean, the general frame for the article was that the debates in general are not a good place to do your faith and values politicking. It's very hard to get into questions of faith when you're face-to-face with your adversary in front of, oh, I don't know, a quarter or maybe half of the American people. So my prediction was you wouldn't hear much, but if you did hear something about religion, you'd hear something along the lines of what happened last Wednesday night in Denver.
Did you get the feeling that there was a deliberate attempt on the part of either candidate to not get caught up in religious language in that debate?
Yeah, I think they tend to be very uncomfortable, especially when they're face-to-face talking about these sorts of things. But Romney did craft out a little paragraph for himself towards the end where he went strong with a lot of the themes that I thought he was going to stress, in particular this idea of religious freedom and religious liberty, which has become a thorn in the side of the Obama campaign.
Were you surprised that Obama didn't respond to the opponent's comment?
I was surprised about everything vis-a-vis Obama yesterday. I don't know why he was looking down just in terms of body motion. Yeah. He's done this before. I was thinking about it. He often surprises his base and flusters them. I remember once writing an opinion piece for the Chronicle Ed, and it was entitled Obama Do Something, and Do Something was in quotes. And at a few moments in the history of Obama's presence on the American presidential stage, his base has been screaming, do something. One example was right when Palin and McCain, prior to the meltdown on Black Monday in September of 2008, they were just racing up in the polls after the convention. So it was Obama, do something. During the deficit crisis, Obama, do something. Mm-hmm. And I think at the debate yesterday, from what I can tell from Democratic friends, they were all twittering, Obama, do something.
Is he going to do something?
What's amazing about Obama is how he does do something, and he somehow escapes from what seems to be a disastrous situation. So my guess is, in terms of general debating strategies, he's going to come back a lot sharper and a lot tougher at the next debate. If he doesn't, he's in very, very big trouble.
I'm interested in your observation, too, that this whole discussion of religious freedom is a thorn in his side that he probably would just as soon avoid. I don't know that I expected Jim Lehrer to bring that subject up,
but I
do have the feeling that to talk about domestic issues right now and not address the controversies that are swirling in the religious liberty area is somewhat a mistake.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the Obama team's strategy is to really tamp down on anything having to do with religious freedom and religious liberty out of a total fear that this could rouse the nation's largest single denominational voting group, which are Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
So his numbers with Catholics are pretty good. He's still at 54% prior to Wednesday night's debate. So I think this is a very calculated sort of rope-a-dope strategy in which he doesn't want to bring up anything having to do with the HHS mandates, brouhaha. You're right that at some point he might have to, but I'm not sure we've reached that point just yet.
Yeah. Well, did you see Romney as being frustrated at not being able to say more about that subject?
No, I think towards the end, I think it was a pretty even debate for the first 30 minutes or so,
uh-huh.
and then Romney just galloped ahead. he did a lot of what in soccer are called set pieces yesterday. There were clearly moments when he would go into a 35 to 75 second run, which was purely scripted. I mean, word for word. And he had this stuff down, and that's fair debating strategy. And it served him very, very well. So he did give a little speech yesterday where he used a lot of code words vis-a-vis religion, which I think, you know, were very, very effective. And Obama just said nothing about it. He just let it go.
Well, you know, we used to hear a lot about George W. Bush's coded language. What were the coded words that you picked up on in the debate?
All right. Well, I think the major thing was when he spoke about religious toleration. Mm-hmm. The exact quote is, "I believe we must maintain our commitment to religious tolerance and freedom in this country." So that was a clear wink out to the base, right? Vis-a-vis the HHS difficulties that the Obama administration has endured. That statement also says that we are endowed by our Creator with the right to pursue happiness as we choose. I was twittering madly at that moment. Whenever Declaration of Independence and constitutional references like that come up, you know a Republican is going to start doing God talk, right? And saying things like, "We get our rights from God, not government," in complete contradiction to what we read in Romans 13, 1 and 2, and, you know, "Render unto Caesar," which is very, very curious that that's become such an it verse this year. Now, we're a nation that believes that we're all children of the same God, and we care for those that have difficulties. That was somewhat new. I don't know where exactly he was going with children of the same God, but rhetorically, it was very, very effective because it put God on the side of Governor Romney, right? So here, for the first time in the debate, God is mentioned, and it's Romney who's speaking about it, and he's speaking to, I don't know, 80, 90% of the American electorate when he says, "We are all children of this God."
But see, I would think that is not a strong appeal to the evangelical base because they wouldn't believe that.
Right. But if there were a storyline yesterday, it was Romney pivots to the center, parentheses, finally, right? That was a very, very different Mitt Romney we saw yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he was moving to the center. He was probably, assuming that the base is in his back pocket, which it probably is, and assuming that his strategists have now concluded this is no longer a base election, this is a center election, looking at the battleground states. The marching orders yesterday were clear. He was going to present kind of the pre-evangelical Mormon Mitt Romney, almost of 2007 or 2005, a Romney that really was concerned, right, with issues that were not partisanly the issues of the more extreme iteration of the Republican Party that we see now.
Given what you've said about the history of the president, what is your expectation about his involvement in the next debate?
Well, he's going to come out a lot feistier. If he doesn't mention the 47%, he might have an internal mutiny on his hands. He's going to go back to the themes of economic inequality. He will be ready on religion. He won't let Romney own the God talk for the evening. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the next debate is the foreign policy one. So where might we see religion in a foreign policy debate? My guess is there are a lot of legitimate concerns about the freedoms of Christians, particularly in countries that are predominantly Islamic. So that issue might come up vis-a-vis Obama's foreign policy, and he would be well advised to be very, very well prepared to counter what Romney is going to throw at him.
The new book is How to Be Secular, A Call to Arms for Religious Freedom. Tell us about it briefly.
In brief, How to Be Secular is an attempt to resurrect a secular movement, which was actually quite formidable at mid-century. Mm-hmm. And to boil it down into very, very simple terms, the secular movement will work when two of its parts come together. And one part are the great American cohort of non-believers. But the larger part, and the part that played a much larger role in the growth of secularism in the United States, are believers in the United States that would rather not see excessive entanglement between government and religion. And I refer to Baptists, I refer to Jews, I refer to liberal Catholics, all religious minorities that you could name. It's only when all those pieces come together again that we will see some type of pushback to the rather aggressive trespass that we see from some quarters of our society, in which issues of one particular religious group are coming to overrun the way we think about domestic and foreign policy.
I'm going to suggest that we have a longer talk about this because it's a very, very important subject, given the fact that the secular presence is more and more evident in all of the polling on religious data and perspectives on religious freedom.
Right, right. The possibilities are there.
Dr. Berliner Blau, I really do thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio, and I look forward to us talking again really soon about your new book.
Okay, thank you, Reverend Getty.